Hello, and welcome to Her Music Academia, the podcast. I'm your host, Lydia Bangura. I'm a classical vocalist, a soprano to be specific, and I read and write and talk about music a ton in my PhD program at the University of Michigan. I'm studying music theory, so I use the show to talk all things music theory, musicology, performance, music education, composition, conducting. And I have guests on the show to talk about what they do in music as well. Thank you for tuning in to our current season happening during Black History Month. Today on the show, I have a conversation with Aaron Dworkin, who's a violinist and a current professor of entrepreneurship and leadership at the University of Michigan. He is also the founder of the Sphinx Organization, which is the leading arts organization for diversity in the arts. We talk about his musical upbringing all the way up through his current career. He collaborates with so many different types of artists and organizations, such as Detroit Public Television. And we dive into his most recent spoken word album called The Poet Journalist. You can find the links to the album and all of his other work in the show notes. Without further ado, here's our conversation. All right, hello everyone, and welcome to this very special episode of the podcast. Thank you for joining us during Black History Month. We have so many guests coming up this month that I'm really excited about, and one of them is my guest today. We're going to talk all about his upbringing and background in music, his work in music entrepreneurship, and then all of the artistic pursuits that he's currently doing and participating in. So today we're going to talk to Aaron Dworkin. Aaron, how are you?
I am doing fantastic and so excited to be able to have this conversation with you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for coming on. You know, I've actually had, I always kind of start off with how I came to become familiar with a guest or their work. And I've actually had more than one person reach out to me and was like, you need to get Aaron Dworkin on the podcast. And I was like, you know what? We do. We need to make that happen because you're doing so much interesting stuff, especially locally in terms of like Michigan and Detroit. You're just so plugged into the arts and the music that's happening here. And so, yeah, a lot of people were like, listen, if you want to be connected to like Michigan music at all, Detroit music and the artistic scene happening locally, you need to talk to Aaron Dworkin. And I was like, you know what? Let me get this podcast right. So thank you so much for coming on. And I can't wait to hear all about what you're currently pursuing.
Oh, well, thanks so much. I really am excited to be here.
Sure. So let's go ahead and start with you. And just if you could inform me and the listeners a bit about your personal background with music, so where you're from, and if you're from like a musical family, if there are other people in your family that are musicians, either formally or informally, and kind of the music that was happening as you were growing up, what you were listening to, what you gravitated towards, all of that stuff.
Totally. So, it's very interesting in terms of my history. I was born on, of all days, 9/11, and in upstate New York, and I was immediately given up for adoption. I was adopted by a white Jewish couple who already had a birth son, my older brother, and they were behavioral scientists and neuroscientists, and my brother ended up going into science, and I was always in the arts and in music, so literally the black sheep of the family.
Oh, wow.
In many ways, more than just skin color. And then fast forward 31 years, I was reunited with my birth parents, my birth father, who's a black Jehovah's Witness, my birth mother, who's white Irish Catholic, who several years after giving me up for adoption, ended up getting married, and then had another child who they raised, my full sister, Maddie, who practices law in New York. And so in the end, I'm basically a Black, white, Jewish, Irish, Catholic, Jehovah's Witness who grew up with a big afro playing the violin. So,
Wow.
so no big surprise that ultimately led to a life of working in diversity in the arts. And separate from my, if you will, biological and kind of upbringing and all of these different identities and cultures that informed my identity, when I was 5 years old, my adoptive mother was an amateur violinist and kind of became reinvigorated to play. And I took it up and thought it was, amazing and wonderful. And so started playing at the age of five and was very, very lucky that I got access to very good teaching. My first teacher was Vladimir Grafman, who was one of the teachers who brought the Russian School of Teaching over to the States. And so I really was lucky to have that type of access early on. And so ultimately that did of course lead to a life in and around the arts. But that was kind of, if you will, the inception for me.
Okay, yeah. Thank you so much for sharing all that. That's really fascinating. Wow. And like you said, it really makes a lot of sense, kind of knowing the progression of how you got to where you're currently at. So you started playing the violin from an early age, and did you always kind of know that you wanted to go into a career in the arts, or did you have other pursuits that you thought were interesting outside of the arts?
Yeah, so I absolutely love playing the violin, and I thought, I will one day be the world's greatest soloist. So that was certainly a dream growing up. We didn't have a TV in the house growing up, and so I read. So I would say that was a huge thing for me. I loved reading and actually loved reading so much. And especially when I hit my teen years, didn't really like practicing. And so an odd thing happened. So what I would do is immediately and instantly memorize whatever it is I had to practice so that my parents, when they weren't in the house, they would make me record my practicing to make sure that I actually practiced. And so what I would do is memorize whatever I needed to play so that I could read while I practiced. So I would read, turning the pages with my feet, and just play whatever I had memorized so that the recording would show that I practiced the full amount for that day.
Fascinating. Okay.
So which both has, in retrospect, as I reflect back, has both reflects both good and bad qualities about myself. So
it certainly shows that you were thinking creatively about what you wanted to pursue. So that's really fascinating. So, you're kind of on this track to pursue violin performance as a career. So when did you start thinking about maybe other artistic pursuits like the poetry and journalism and other things that you're pursuing now? And when did you start thinking about entrepreneurship?
So I originally grew up in New York. When I was 10 years old, we moved to Hershey, Pennsylvania, because they got transferred basically to the Penn State Medical School, which was based in Hershey. And that was a dramatic change for me, going from literally Midtown Manhattan to a town at the time. It was one Black family and me, big Afro, playing the violin, last name Dworkin in school. And so I was very, very ostracized. And it is at that point that I really kind of began to connect with my music as a way to escape, a way to express. Many times at that point, it was the only positive in my life, because I was excelling at it. I gave my debut when I was 13, performing the Brooke Violin Concerto with the Hershey Symphony, and so all, Concertmaster of the Harrisburg Youth Symphony, things like that. But yeah, the rest of my life was kind of falling apart and in disarray, and very rough time with my parents. So it was at that time that I began writing. as well, and writing poetry is an additional way to express. And then kind of fast forward, things got really bad and it was clear I had to leave home. And so it was basically either juvie, as in juvenile detention, or the Interlochen Arts Academy.
Wow.
My life is filled with extremes. And so luckily, I got a scholarship and went to Interlochen for my junior and senior year of high school. And I credit Interlochen with saving my life in many ways. And one of the things that was extraordinary at Interlochen is you're immersed amongst all artists. And so I was exposed to it and had friends who were, in creative writing and all of that. And it just filled my life with all of these kind of thoughts and a broader sense of the arts. That was very powerful for me. And then initially, I started actually at Penn State. And then I was forced to take 4 years off, which is a whole long story, and disconnected with my parents and all of that. And those 4 years were really tough and very tough financially. But I got a lot of real world experience, and I got experience canvassing, going door to door for organizations, working for various issues, environmental issues, consumer issues. I was almost homeless and cared a lot about homelessness and actually started a homeless organization. So it was in that time that the passions that I had in life, the sense of lack of equality and major issues morphed into what can I do about it? Is there something I can do? So even though I had no resources and even though times were really tough, I started a homeless organization. I started a literary magazine that it had, short stories and poetry, right? So these things were kind of there and building as kind of experimental ventures and passions in my life that at the time I would say were untrained and undeveloped, yet there was this passion and desire to express, to utilize, to immerse and embed myself in them. And then I was able to kind of bring things, get things together in terms of basic finances, and ultimately was able to return to school to Michigan and to get back to my music, which of course was my like original love. And it was when I was back at Michigan that I credit with building my life. So Interlochen saving my life, Michigan building my life, where then I really began to think about, well, what can I do really about these issues? And it was the first time I went into a lesson and was exposed to music by Black composers and all of these things. I started thinking about these issues, and that led to then this idea of, well, there's clearly, how could I, as a biracial, viewed as Black, violinist, never know there were any Black classical composers until I was in college? Like, that's insane. And so that led to me having what in the time was a very simple idea of, well, what if there was a competition for students like me and we could come together, play music by composers of color, be surrounded by our peer group, and gain scholarships to be able to go to the top summer music programs and music schools. And if we did that, that would completely diversify classical music. It would all be solved. And that was the initiation of the Sphinx organization while I was still an undergraduate student. So it didn't happen out of thin air. It happened birthed out of not only my experiences becoming exposed to composers of color, to going to orchestra concerts and not seeing anyone of color in the audience or on stage, but it also was birthed from my whole history up to that point of having no resources, thinking about and how to affect homelessness, how to affect literary access to literary publication, right? All of these things kind of came to a head, and I was able to build off of the experience and knowledge that I gained testing out all of those things in those 4 years. And in some way now, decades later, I try to recreate that in my classes and in my curriculum so that my students don't have to go through 4 years of grief and a lot of terribleness to learn those things, but can actually learn them in a classroom setting and gain those resources so that they can be entrepreneurial, so that they can build trajectories of their own in the arts or creative ecosystem in a way that is fulfilling for them. So all of those things kind of combined and led me to do that. And that's how I ended up doing my undergraduate and graduate degrees at Michigan. So very long answer, sorry, to your question there,
Please,
but.
this is a podcast, so we only want the long answers here. So
Right.
thank you. Thank you for sharing. Wow. You know, I think what is so important about your sharing that story, and your trajectory is that you are not the only one with a trajectory like that in terms of like so many performers of color, students of color who are really interested in music that don't see themselves reflected in the music that they're playing. I have, you know, similar experiences as someone who's, so I'm from the Southwest, like I was bouncing back and forth between Denver and Phoenix. And so, was definitely the only black person in all of the orchestras that I was in. I was a violist originally, and now I'm a singer, but I was playing viola for about 10 years, and of course was only playing music by white men. And so I had a similar experience of when I got to college first encountering composers of color, black composers specifically. Black composers I didn't encounter until I was in my master's degree. So it's like I had already gotten through my undergraduate degree in Arizona and then got to master's and was like, oh, now I'm seeing the vision here. So I think that's a unfortunately a common experience for a lot of performers of color that are in classical music spaces, like really struggling not only to see themselves re represented, but also to gain support in all white spaces, right? That can be an incredibly isolating, like you said, ostracizing experience. And so it's so great that you took those experiences and wanted to, you know, actualize an intervention right into those experiences. And so it's really exciting work. So thank you for sharing all of that. Yeah, so I'd also love to, now that we've started to talk about Sphinx, I'd love to talk about Sphinx Connect and that conference. I'm really excited to be attending this year for the first time. I heard about it last year, but I think I couldn't get it together in time to go. So I'm really excited that I can attend this year. So, what can folks expect from the Sphinx Connect conference?
Yeah, well, it's such an extraordinary just space to be in, right? So we're talking about, around 1,000 people from literally all over the world, all of whom are coming together because they want to be in a space where we're thinking and talking about and expressing diversity in the arts and especially in classical music and in a host of ways. And so there are sessions and panels that deal with everything from the idea of programming and repertoire to marketing and commissioning and fundraising and all of the different aspects that everyone is working on, and it's incredibly diverse. And all of the people who care about this issue in the industry, and various leaders, and also, of course, all of the just practitioners and artists of color are there. So it is the space. It is the largest convening related to diversity in the arts that takes place. And so it's a very special kind of moment and space to be in. And at the upcoming Sphinx Connect this January, for one of our plenaries, I'll be interviewing for our opening plenary Maria Rosario Jackson, who is chair of the National Endowment for the Arts, first African American chair of the NEA. And so that will just be an extraordinary conversation. She's just an extraordinary leader and mind and advocate for everything that the arts is, and especially has talked a lot about the idea of artful living and what that means. And so Those are the types of things that will go on. And all the while that this is happening, the Sphinx Symphony is there and the finals of the National Sphinx Competition. So at the conclusion of the convening, everyone gets to go to Orchestra Hall and see the finals, where the top three laureates of the Sphinx Competition will performing with the Sphinx Symphony as they compete for the $50,000 first place prize that they win, and then go and solo with orchestras around the country. So it is a very exciting time. And then, of course, we would be remiss if we didn't have a nice, fun party after that, dance party at the hall. Afterwards, everyone gets to, utilize movement, enjoy great food, but also just utilize movement to celebrate everything that's taken place.
Oh, great. I'm so excited. It's going to be a great time. A little plug for me, I did get asked to be on one of the panels, which I'm really excited about. So it's the Radio Waves of Change panel. So it's a panel about radio and black music. And I was shocked when they asked me because it was related to this podcast. And I was like, oh, yeah, does that count as radio? And they were like, yeah, it counts. Like, get on this panel. So I'm really, really honored that I was asked to participate. And I can't wait to be a part of facilitating that discussion. So we are currently planning that panel right now. And I'm really excited to see all of the other conversations and performances that happen. So really looking forward to
Right.
it.
And it's so critically important, right? And this work that you're doing is so important. And so you being able to share the things you've learned, what you employ to be able to have the impact you're having, is so important. And that you're right, that is the heartbeat of what Sphinx Connect is.
Thank you. I'm really, really looking forward to it. So yes, thank you again for sharing all that, for all of the work that you've started and continue to do. Yes, so let's continue with a conversation about your recent work that you've been engaged in the past year or so. So you have kind of coined this term, the poet journalist, and I would love if we could just start off with a definition of what that term means and how you're utilizing it.
Yeah, so I've written poetry, right, as I mentioned, since I've been a kid, and that developed over the years into a number of things, but basically a lot of spoken word art. So I perform a lot and create different works, oftentimes with music, and so I perform those with orchestras around the country, things like that. I'll actually be doing one of the works that I created, American Rhapsody, with the Toledo Symphony, actually
Oh,
coming
great.
up in February. So I was doing that, and then a couple of years ago, I was thinking and realizing that I wanted to do another collection of poetry. My first collection came out 10 years ago, and in that, I was thinking about the poems that I wanted to write and what I wanted to capture, and I didn't want to just create something where, a few hundred people read it, mostly in the academic space, and comment on it, this and that, and that's kind of it, right? I wanted it to impact people, and to hopefully touch people and to comfort or challenge or otherwise engage people, and not just be assessed, right? And so in thinking about that and thinking about the poetry that I wanted to do, I was thinking about a lot of the poetry I wanted to write, and it was about various things and events taking place, issues in society. And I was also at the time very frustrated with current journalism, which to me is very polarized, kind of like our society. So it's either a reflection or it's contributing to our polarization. And so I was like, in the same way, I was like, there's photojournalists who are capturing. I was like, I want to capture these stories, but through poetry. I was like, poet journalists. I was like, it's poet journalism. And then I was like, okay, that's probably a thing. And then I looked up, literally Googled it, and I was like, oh, it's not a thing. Like, I couldn't find it anywhere. So I was like, which is why now, if you go to poetjournalist.com or .org, it will take you to my website. And so I was like, ah, so, and I love kind of being in a space that's novel. And so I was like, okay, so the terminology that I just thought of appears to be novel. So what do I actually really mean by that? And so I started thinking about that and really trying to define it. And ultimately, what I came up with was that it's journalism, but in which a news story or other event is presented in poetic form, incorporating elements of emotion, opinion, and creative illustration. And so I was like, yes, that is because that's what I want to do. I want to capture these things, but I do want to bring emotion into it. I do sometimes want to bring opinion. So, an opinion journalistic piece. And most importantly, I want to use the medium to creatively illustrate, to immerse someone in a particular place or space. And so that kind of is what initially, kind of helped me to frame for myself what it is that I wanted to kind of capture and do. And then that led to saying, okay, so if I am going to do this, I should have two things. One, I should actually write a poem that helps to define what it is that I want to do. And then also, like everything else that I've realized as an entrepreneur, everything is built on partnerships. So I was like, instead of again just doing this and just creating some book and choosing all these topics, what if I try to find places to partner with where their mission is in alignment with the poetry I want to write? I could provide something of value to them, this poetry that captures their work, and they would basically be commissioning me to write these different poems, and wouldn't that be great? And so on and so forth. And so I started that process a couple of years ago, and that led to then me becoming the poet journalist in residence for Complexions Contemporary Ballet, for the Rodham Institute, George Washington University, of Ovation TV Network, of the Wright Museum of African American History, of Char Music, of now for the City of Ann Arbor's Bicentennial, et cetera, for the Fisher Foundation. So it led to these extraordinary partnerships, which then just helped to serve to fuel and frame my creativity. I wanted to bring my poet journalism. And so that was one, is all of these partnerships, which helped to then create the basis of both the album as well as the book that I released this past year. But then also, I was like, I should create a poem that also helps to kind of capture all of this. And that led to my actual poem, The Poet Journalist, which was designed to kind of share how I would capture these ideas and things that otherwise were news stories. So each stanza captured, I have a stanza about Tiananmen Square. I have a stanza about the financial collapse, a stanza about 9/11 attack, a stanza obviously about George Floyd. And so the way that that captures, like the stanza related to George Floyd, and this gets right towards the end that leads to ultimately the definition. But is and is it okay if I kind of mention that or share that
Yes, yeah.
here? Is I am the 9 minutes and 29 seconds that a black man donning a black tank top felt the knee of dispassionate authority on his full-throated neck before his life with voice was ground into silence that was heard and shook the sugar maple trees of Richmond, Virginia, and broke the blue wall more than any Afro pick with fist. I am the grist for bottled water office talk. I assist the memory to feel the moments lost. I am the emotion of every story missed. I am the words the newsprint failed to list. I am our soul we must enlist. I am the poet journalist. And so I was using that to try to ultimately define, through all of those actual examples of news stories, how to capture them, how to illustrate, instead of saying, George Floyd was murdered on the street, during the day at this address, et cetera, feeling the knee of dispassionate authority, Thinking of someone's life with voice and how that gets ground into silence, thinking about the sugar maple trees in the South and just immersing someone in a moment rather than just reading facts about it. And so that's why I've come to love this medium, and that ultimately led to the book and album, The Poet Journalist, which are not the same. There are different poems on each. And so I encourage people to both stream as well as buy the book wherever books are sold, as they say.
Yes, people. Again, all the links are going to be in the show notes, listeners. So please check the show notes for all of the links to Aaron's work that we mentioned. But yeah, thank you for sharing. This is really fascinating. And you already kind of touched on it. I was going to ask you, as I was looking through your website and noticing, okay, poet journalist in residence, like through all these different, organizations and departments and fields, right? It's so like cross-disciplinary. And so especially, with your background in entrepreneurship, you're now like collaborating with like dance and so I wanted to hear about how this work has been kind of translating to other mediums like dance, like art, like music, as you've mentioned that you're going to be collaborating with live music in performance. So I'd also just love to hear about like, how you're interacting with all these different mediums through poet journalism.
Oh yeah, totally. And so so the wonderful thing, or the part that is so exciting for me, is that they're all different, because the organizations themselves are so different. So for the Rodham Institute, they focus on health inequality. So I've written poems about health inequality, how your zip code defines your life expectancy. Wrote a poem about this community that is east of the river in DC, and how it originated from this berry farm, and called the Berry Farm, and the history of inequity and those types of things. So it runs the gamut to that, to the Wright Museum, where it could be about an exhibit. They had a King Tut exhibit, so I wrote a poem, The Boy King, about how I felt inspired being immersed in that exhibit of King Tut. With Complexions, this amazing, extraordinary contemporary ballet company, and how they express through their movement and their bodies, and so there, being able to perform with a dancer on stage and engage and connect with them. As we experience that, one of the I wrote a poem that was kind of celebrating their season that we just did at the opening at the Joyce Theater in New York, and this is their 29th season. And so one of those stanzas is a Genesis witnessed across 29 summers and winters, ballet born in the crucible of possibility, an ethic of work carved from the muscle of sinewy talent. It's just like to again be able to try to capture them through this medium of poetry is, I mean, it's just an honor because they're extraordinary what they do.
Yeah, thank you for that. This all sounds so fascinating in terms of seeing how, this poetry, this work can really manifest in all of these different ways. And, I really appreciate the collaborative nature of how you've kind of designed this work in terms of from the inception, like, oh, I need to find people who are interested in supporting this work, who are interested in participating in this work, so that it's not, like you're saying, just like a solo endeavor that you kind of just put out, on the internet or whatever. Like you're really being intentional about making it a collaborative process and project and ongoing. It feels so living, right? It feels so
Oh
ongoing,
yeah.
which is
And
really exciting.
Totally. And if I could just comment and reinforce that idea that you just shared, because collaboration is, it's absolutely at the heart of it. But for me, it's also at the heart of everything I do. It's one of the cornerstones in both of my classes that I share with students about the importance of collaboration. Entrepreneurs never do what they do alone. It's through this power of collaboration and everything that I do. I have my weekly show, Arts Engines, that comes out that people can also subscribe to for free at artsengines.org. But where I'm interviewing every week arts administrators, right, who are the engines of the industry. But even there with that show, it's not like I say, okay, I'm going to choose who I interview and choose these 52 people a year for this weekly show. But instead, I partner with over 50 organizations who co-curate every single show. So again, it's collaboration. So literally, whether it's my shows, whether it's my teaching, whether it's my poetry, whether it's any other aspects of my entrepreneurship, collaboration, those types of partnerships, engaging with others in a real way that is two-way and that allows people to influence and affect what I do. And for me to be able to play a part in what they do is just at the heart of everything I do. And I don't think I would be able to have the sustainability or success of the things that I do if I didn't have that approach.
Black jazz. A verse of Langston Hughes. Rhythm of Maya Angelou. Intimate activism by Nikki Giovanni. Pulses within my capillaries, fueling extremities when my heart can't keep up with the drumbeat. In insulation from oppression. The dance in words speaks to me through a divinity of expression intertwined with an experience unique to blackness in a place where light filtered inside smoke-filled clubs gave birth to the sound of my people who couldn't speak on the streets
Absolutely,
outside.
absolutely. So let's finish up with just a couple of minutes talking about the poet journalist, the album. So I got to listen to the album. It's really thrilling, fascinating work. So thank you so much for that work and for sharing it with us. I'd love to hear a bit about like the process of creating the album in terms of like recording it, writing it. How was that like for you? I also kind of noticed a distinct to me as I was listening, you know, there's kind of the absence of music, which in other kind of spoken word, you know, art that I've encountered, oftentimes there's a lot of like ambient sounds or there's music incorporated in some way. You have already said that you're incorporating music in live settings. But I'd also really like to hear about kind of your thoughts about like the presence or absence of music on the album.
So yes, and which is of course very intentional. So as I began this process of being a poet journalist, there I was interested, having done so much poetry with music that I have referred to for years as musetry, that what I wanted to do was do an exploration into the a cappella role and to really try and delve deeper into the voice and into the articulation of the words and to try to really go deep. And so that was the intent in this, and to try to figure out how that works. And so when I did say that work with the dancer with complexions is just my voice with movement, it's just this fascinating kind of moments in time to do these things. And so with the album, I wanted to do that and was able to work with just an amazing engineer and producer, Alan Buys. And this came out on Azika Records, and who usually does music and does these extraordinary albums, has won Grammys, Deutsche Grammophon, other great labels that he's done all this amazing work with. And so it was amazing to work with him on just voice and just going deep into that and the arc of dynamics of our of articulation of space of silence and so I loved that process. So that was very intentional. And then also just thinking about the arc of what was the story that I wanted to kind of tell with the album. And so in that, I have various pillars that are focus areas. And so there's African American history, there's the arts, there's women, the power of women, there's identity, mental health, and childhood. So there's these kind of spaces that people can choose to go to and find different poems there, or they can just listen to the entirety of the album and just take the arc that gets woven through these different areas and kind of pillars of focus.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, listeners, please check out the album when you get a chance. It's a really fascinating endeavor. And again, if there's one thing that Aaron's gonna do, it's pronounce. The diction, it's amazing. So, again, you're like the way you're performing the poems, right, itself is so musical. And so, I do think it's a really striking and really lovely choice, right, to like you're saying, kind of focus on the voice rather than kind of incorporate other sounds or other music. Like the way that you're performing it in and of itself is so musical. So it's really nice to kind of have the spotlight on the solo voice. Yeah, and I just want to shout out a couple faves. Mahogany Stories, loved it. Black Jazz, loved it. Love, love, loved it. How's the reception of the album been?
Oh, it's been great. It's been great. And of course, like anyone, I would have loved to have gotten a Grammy nod last month, but I did not get the Grammy nod, but I've just gotten so much wonderful feedback. So I no complaints on that front, but and again, like what you just mentioned, everyone who talks to me has a couple of their favorites, right? Ones that just really stood out. The Black Jazz is definitely up there. Many people mention it, and that's one of those, right, where I wanted to just create that inflection so that my delivery, hopefully, also in addition to the words, helps to put someone in that space of that special, special space of Black Jazz. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I also really appreciated through kind of like the narrative arc of the album, like you're saying, I feel like it's so localized. Like Michigan and Detroit play such a huge role in that narrative arc, and so I also find it so refreshing to listen to someone who's so invested in the music of a place, right? And noticing the musicians and the artistic activity that's happening locally, which I really appreciated because every geographic location, every community, right, has like a different sound. And so like when you're talking about something like jazz, right, that's as broad as jazz, the jazz in Harlem is going to be different from the jazz in Detroit, from the jazz in Chicago, New Orleans, Kansas City, all have very different sounds. And so I also found it so interesting, the mentions of Detroit to be really fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. As I say, Detroit. And I love capturing it, and I love our community. It's just incredible. And of course, steeped with so much of the arts that we emanate to the rest of the world, to the planet. So to be able to do that is just so much fun. So.
Well, I think that's basically all the questions that I have. So, is there anything else that you want to mention or anything that we should be aware of that's coming up?
So I would say just yes, certainly people check out the book and the album and or my show Arts Engines on Saturdays. And of course Sphinx Connect coming up in January. And I just want to thank you for all of your work that you're doing, and everyone should come and check out your session at Sphinx Connect. But thank you for everything that you do.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for coming on the show. This was so fascinating to hear more about, and I'm just so happy to be connected to you and aware of your work.
Thanks so much.
And that is going to do it for this episode of the podcast. Thank you so much to Aaron Dworkin for being on the show. I learned so much from our conversation. His career gives me so many ideas for what a multifaceted career in music could really look like. Make sure you purchase or stream The Poet Journalist. All the links to everything that we mentioned are in the show notes. If you want to get in touch with me about the show, if you have any suggestions for what I should talk about on the show next, if you want to be on the show as a guest yourself because you're a musician and you want to talk about it, I would love to talk to you about it. Send me an email at hermusicacademia@gmail.com. Or go to my website, hermusicacademia.com, and fill out the contact form there. I look forward to chatting with you. Stay tuned for next month when we feature four more guests for Women's History Month. Until next time, thanks for listening.